What we are calling Tartaria, it is the same as Eurasia, or better, Turan. In the middle of the Eurasian steppes, there existed a kind of matrix of all Indo-European peoples coming from there and spreading through the earth.
Hey, everybody, tune in to Recent Tartarians!
Recent Tartarians! Recent Tartarians!
So, first of all, I would like to introduce myself. I am, first of all, philosopher. I am philosopher. That is the beginning and the end of my introduction. I was born in Soviet Union. I never was really Soviet man, despite of my parents. I was formed under influence of the very small group of traditionalists. So I was born mentally, intellectually, with René Guénon books, with the philosophy of traditionalism, criticizing hardly modern world. My ambience was part of this modernity that I have taught to hate, following Guénon. So that was the logical attitude toward communism. The communism was to myself a kind of anti-tradition, a kind of modern world that is upside down. So I was taught by texts of Guénon to hate that. But I didn't know Western world because Soviet Union was closed. But when I was capable to come to the West, I was convinced that these critics of Guénon is applicable, fits absolutely to Western liberal capitalism. And more than that, being anti-Soviet and anti-Soviets from very, very young age, from my youth, I have arrived to the position that somehow the Western capitalism is worse. So that doesn't mean that Soviet Union was good or communism was right, but for sure it was much worse than traditional society. But capitalism was so worse than that, explained why in the logic of decline of the cycle, capitalism has won in Russia. For me, that was explanation of the Guénonian thesis about the degradation of the present Western civilization. So that is more or less my formation. And from my early youth, I started not only to study traditionalism, the works of Guénon, of Kumaraswamy, and the other, of Evola, but as well I started to apply their ideas to politology, to geopolitics, to sociology, to anthropology. So I've started to develop practically traditionalism, applying its principles and methods to different realms where most of traditionalists never dared to enter or declined to enter. So that is my logic was that, and I have discovered something like traditionalism in Eurasianism and Russian tradition, and I have discovered geopolitics and ideas of about the sea and the earth corresponded perfectly with Eurasianist teaching of Russian conservative thinkers. So that was a kind of synthesis between traditionalism, geopolitics, conservative revolution, and Russian conservative thought, Christian Orthodox, mystic, sociology, Russian tradition. And that was a kind of global vision about the fight of tradition against modernity. That was main position, and a kind of projection of both principles, tradition and modernity, on the horizontal level, on the geopolitical level, and that was the earth against the sea. And modern geopolitics of Brzezinski, for example, American Atlanticist tradition, as it understands that. So that was a kind of combination of different level. And after that, I have discovered and studied Heidegger, adding existential elements to this, with this traditionalist, geopolitical, conservative, religious, metaphysical, Russian mystical tradition. I added as well existential element, and through Heidegger, I have discovered phenomenological tradition. Going to Husserl, to Brentano, and through them, I have discovered Aristotle. And that was a very, very important discovery, because many of us start with Aristotle, and I have finished with Aristotle. And that was very particular, because I have arrived to Aristotle through phenomenology. And that is very particular experience, through Heidegger, through Alexis Meinong, and others. So, and step by step, I have arrived to some complex vision based on traditionalism, but developed in different fields. And I have my masterpiece, my opus magnum, is Noomachia, 24 volumes, books, all of them huge, every volume. So dedicated to study of the different civilizations. So that was multipolarity applied to different civilizations using traditionalist criticism of racism of modern epistemology, Western epistemology. So that was an idea to study civilization as they are and not as the modern progressist liberal West used to understand them. So that was the huge work dedicated against racism of the Western ethnocentric vision of the things. So studying, for example, Iranian civilization, I didn't look at the Iranian civilization with Greek eyes, as all of us do, but I've tried to look at the other world from the Iranian point of view. The same for African society, the same for American society. That was for me very, very unusual, very, very interesting, exciting experience to feel myself American. But without that, you could not understand the identity. So I have covered with my studies all existing or ancient civilization on some level. I don't pretend to be exhaustive in that. It is just first approach, but approach from with a radically different point of view than is common to the Western science, that is continuation somehow of Toynbee or Oswald Spengler's approaches. So something, but much more, more accentuated, emphasizing of traditionalism, and totally refuse to apply the progress or some linear vision of time and social development, so evolution, without all these modern Western myths. So when I study some society, I believe in what the people believe living there. So I've tried to transform myself in this mental, intellectual trip in the subject and not describe them as the objects. And the subject is that is an emphatic attitude of American anthropologists, the tradition of Franz Boas or French Claude Lévi-Strauss. I am follower of these two great founders of the school of the structural anthropology. And so that was my approach, was combination of the traditionalism, geopolitics, idea of the dignity of any kind of society, developed or archaic, complex or simple or primitive. So, and idea that human is always based on the relation to the sacred. So no human, no sacred, no human. But in all civilization, in any civilization, this relation is different. So we could not apply unique attitude. And the worst of this attitude, that is negation of the sacred, that is the basis of the modern Western civilization, that we could inscribe it in this global map of mental map of different possibility to treat the sacred. One of the possibility is to refuse it, its existence. But that was more or less my approach. But I'm first of all philosopher. I've tried some political projects that weren't too successful, but recognized. I've tried apply my ideas to the politics, but that was rather not too fruitful experience. But always through all my phases of my life, I was, and I hope until the end, I will be a philosopher.
That's beautiful. So at one point you described your rejection of everything you were taught in the Soviet Union as modernity. So atheism for sacredness, or I think you said spirituality, mysticism. How does mysticism play a role in the Dyson or the existence of a culture, of a person? And how does mysticism matter today?
So first of all, mysticism is nothing else than soul. If you believe in an existence of the soul, so you believe in something hidden, because the soul is hidden. And this hidden center of life, the origin of human life, of thought, of feeling, of emotion, that is something that is buried in the body. It is, and when we try to discover it, we are entering in some special realm of the reality that is called mystical. Mystical because it needs some initiation, some consecration. You could not get there being totally involved in the external world. You need to make return, and you need to have some master, some teacher who would eventually push you inside of yourself. So that is a kind of return or turn, mystical turn in our own life. But in Soviet Union, there was nothing of the sort, or nothing at all. And there was two attitudes. In my youth, I thought that this mystical turn being totally absent in Soviet society can be achieved by total rejection of this society. For example, if society doesn't believe in God, God doesn't believe in such society. And if we search God, the God, so we need to not believe in the existence of the society. So society without faith isn't society. And that was a kind of total rejection of Soviet ontology. I didn't believe any word of said by Soviet mass media, by Soviet school teacher, by institution, materialist science. And that was the very interesting experience of rejection of totality of the society. So if society doesn't believe in God, God doesn't believe in the society. If we believe in God, we with God could not accept the existence of that. That is the total rejection of the immediate being around ourselves, and to choose the God that is denied or thought to be non-existent, to choose the God and to reject the society that doesn't believe it. So that is as well mystical experience, radical. We can compare that with radical nihilism, but sacred nihilism. Because it's not the nihilism in the front of the being as such or God creation. It is just a denial or refuse or rejection of the nihilistic society or civilization that became totalitarian and radically present. So if there is society without sacred center, and if society radically doesn't accept sacredness, in the same totalitarian way reject such society. That is very helpful, very useful phenomenon, because now we should apply that, I recommend apply to Western liberal reality that is like Soviet one in my eyes, but worse. And secondary, when we have lost Soviet Union and when we have entered in the liberal capitalist world, in the retrospectively, I have found in the Soviet Union elements, much hidden sacredness, because to some aspect of atheistic, materialistic, communist society were much more traditional than capitalist. For example, denial of individual collectivity. That was the perverted version of the, I would say, holistic anthropology. So it was created on the wrong basis of Marxism, of modern understanding of human personality, but collectivism, that was a kind of continuation of holistic anthropology of the church, of the traditional society, and that was conserved despite of communist dogma. So I have identified some elements, some principles that weren't evident for me before, after the experience of this. So I became a bit philo-Soviet when exactly in the moment when the Soviet Union ended to exist. So not before. Before I was totally, I rejected totally Soviet Union. But when it ceased to exist, I have discovered that it's some positive points in comparison with capitalism that arrived. So about sacredness. So I thought and I regarded Soviet Union as society with zero sacredness, but that was a small mistake. The real society with zero sacredness is modern globalist liberal capitalism. And Soviet Union had an infinitely small quantity of the sacredness. That is not the same, because the real zero, the limit of the total perversion of human being, spirit, ontology, justice, it is what we have now with global liberal system. And Soviet Union, in comparison with that, infinitely small, but infinitely small is something, and global liberalism is nothing. So it is very small something, so there almost nothing. There was almost no sacredness, but comparing with no sacredness at all, you see, oh, we had something, we have lost something positive. So, but finally, being traditionalist, I advocate all sacredness, the whole of the sacredness, so traditional society, and I don't like any compromise with the modernity. So I am in favor of total restoration of golden age, of totality of the sacredness, without any compromise with this eschatological end of time.
So it sounds like a bit of nostalgia for the storm, but do you think that maybe the nostalgia is stronger than your love for the actual, or is your criticism or your nostalgia stronger? And in general, in the West, we have the same rejection of ontology. We have Atlantic ontology, Anglo-centricity or Atlanto-centricity to reject.
So maybe I agree with you, because when I see, for example, Anglo-Saxon films of the 50s, it is something like golden age. So I agree. So maybe, but the degradation of modern liberal West is so huge that comparing with this, the previous stage of degradation appear like something perfect, wonderful. So when we see the persons like Biden, like modern elite, Western elite, it is really something totally different from the previous generations of the rulers, of the masters. So degradation is so great that this comparison maybe is valid for the Western civilization as well. I could agree. Maybe some nostalgic element plays here the part, but I would like to say that Eurasianism nevertheless operates with the idea that heartland, or a civilization of the earth, it is much more conservative in itself. So a civilization of the sea is less conservative, is most modern from the beginning, Carthage in the ancient time was modern. Rome in the modern time was pre-modern. So pre-modernity versus modernity, it is always continent or heartland against the sea. And Anglo-Saxon identity, starting from some point from Tudor dynasty in England, became more and more and more thalassocratic. And this thalassocracy destroyed step by step continental or earthly tellurocratic identity of the British people. So United States from the beginning was mixture between these radically thalassocratic elements of Great Britain and simple people living on the earth. So there was a very important element of tellurocracy in the history of identity of United States, only with Mayhem, only with Roosevelt above all, after the First World, only with Wilson and his 14 points, America became really Atlantic thalassocratic power, and theoretically that was developed by Admiral Mahan. Identity of this branch of Saxon civilization with big German elements inside, but with Protestant elements from all the Europe up to a certain point, also French elements, because Louisiana was French and many, or Spanish, because all the South and the West was Mexico, Spanish, and late Catholic. So all this mixture, all these elements were much more tellurocratic in America. America became the great sea power only after the demise of the Great Britain after First World War. And you make equivalence between United States of America and this thalassocracy is one thing. If you accept a deeper American identity of Walden, of Emerson, of also if you consider Pierce, because I am very, very interested in pragmatism, because original pragmatism was very American, and that was very special ontology. It was not utilitarianism or neither materialism. There was nor this kind of utilitarian approach to the thing. Pragmatism was different thing. So American identity was from the beginning, or deep American identity was different comparing with Anglo-Saxon, British, late thalassocratic, with new American identity. Wilsonian American identity as defender of global democracy, interventionism, and so on. So we have different Americas, and I think they're now is in conflict. So both of them have nothing to do with Eurasianism. Both of them very strange to and very far from Eurasianism. But one element of American identity linked to pragmatism, to pre-Wilsonian or not Wilsonian traditionalist America. Now it is represented by Trump and his supporters. So it is not small element that half of American population still follows this American way, but the other is totally loyal to this globalist agenda that is other, purely Carthage. So there is a kind of Rome, very special Rome in America, but mostly it is Carthage. And so in America, geopolitics is inner problem, domestic problem. So it is now, at least, that is the fight between two elemental levels of identity. We could not identify or make equal American continentalism with Eurasianism, but some comparison is possible, I think.
If you think about early Marxist rejection of the bourgeoisie, it rejected the benefits as well as the dysfunctions of the bourgeoisie. So much of the architecture, for instance, and the orthodox architecture and customs that were replaced with brutalism and minimalism, sort of the way you felt after there was a loss of certain amount of Dyson or spirit in the Soviet Union. Do you think that there's a chance of losing some of the benefits or some of the achievements that are beneficial from the Atlanticist hegemony? And do you think that there's a way of protecting a loss of those benefits?
So I regard Atlanticism as pure thalacracy. Atlanticism is Carthage. It is not Rome, nothing to do with Rome. It is anti-Rome. Being anti-Rome, I reject it totally. So in my opinion, Atlanticism is pure evil from the beginning, as liberalism was pure evil, as bourgeoisie and capitalism is and was pure evil. But Marxism was good in the rejection of the capitalism, but bad in accepting some elements of capitalism and bourgeoisie inside of its tradition. If we read carefully the manifesto of the Marx, of the Communist, written by Marx and Engels, we see that a huge part of it is dedicated to criticism of something that was very important for Marx and Engels, criticizing of not Marxist socialism, and a kind of rejection of capitalism from the right. So huge, and in that sense, it's very important, because for Marx, there was the key point was solidarity with the capitalism, with Atlanticism, with as well with colonization, expansion, with British Empire, bringing to the people capitalist phase of development. And only after establishing everywhere capitalist order, according to the Marx, the proletarian revolution will be possible. So it's, and in his introduction to a manifest of the Communist Party, the greatest part of it is dedicated to the criticism of those who opposed capitalism, not being in nothing in solidarity with it, but demanded some social justice, some anti-capitalist value, but not coming all this line with capitalism. So, and I belong to this tradition totally criticized by Marx, because I think that capitalism it isn't inevitable, isn't good, is morally bad, and we need to reject it from the very beginning. So we need to destroy capitalism immediately when we see it. We should put bourgeois under the rule of the priests and the warriors, as there was the case in the Middle Ages. So we need to eradicate any effort of the so-called third estate. That was not, in my opinion, not third estate. The estate third estate was traditionally in the European societies was peasantry and not bourgeois. Bourgeois were usurpers of their position. So they were perverted creature that have stolen the name of third estate from the real third estate of peasants. They started to represent something they were not. That was the lie. And they tried to use some missions received from the noblesse, from the aristocracy and the priests, in order to exploit the same peasants. So that was a kind of alien introduction in the traditional society, because when there are some artisan, some people making small industry, it is acceptable. But when the bourgeois becomes the class and start to impose their attitude to all society, it is a catastrophe. It is already the end of time. So in my opinion, bourgeois order should be destroyed and should die in all phases. And so if you meet bourgeois, kill him, because it is a kind of crime against the traditional order, and not and communist idea to be in solidarity with it and after overcome good, but to be in solidarity bad. That is my opinion, but not against bourgeois as small merchant or people making some goods. That is quite acceptable. But when capitalism starts to impose the value of money, of banking, the growth of the credit and so on, so here I see the enemy and not conservator of something good. I agree in that with Ezra Pound. Once more with American author, because his cantos are dedicated totally to a real hatred to bourgeois. Bourgeois for him was precisely the destruction of all the beauty in the world, because bourgeois is ugly, capitalism is ugly, it destroys the beauty, it destroys the dignity, it corrupts the creativity of the people, it destroyed traditional order. It by capitalism, by the warriors. Capitalism destroyed the sacredness of the priest. So I think that the banking, the growth of the money, all economy of financial bubble we are living in, it is pure evil in all sense. Nothing to conserve in that. It should be destroyed totally. In that sense, I'm revolutionary, but not Marxist, because I don't share with Marxist this idea that capitalism is inevitable. I share with him idea that it is bad and we should fight him, but I don't agree that it is inevitable, it is common destiny. And if we have society with no capitalism, we should preserve them such as they are. We should help them to go their way and not impose on them. In that sense, I very in the same mood and same spirit as Werner Herzog film, where the green ants dream. There is a great film of him about how destructive capitalism for aborigines of Australia is.
Capitalism can be pretty exploitive of the proletariat, but as well, so can communism. It seems the Soviet Union was rather exploiting of its people. And so, of course, is Western Atlanticism and Western liberalism. I wonder, do you think that you could explain how it's possible that something that's trying to do so much good could be so exploitive of its people, both communism or traditionalism or Western liberalism?
So, first of all, I don't think that capitalism exploits proletarians. So, proletarian, it is another void concept of communists, because proletarian, it is kind of peasant who came to the city, but he's still peasant. He is nobody or proletarian in the eyes of bourgeois, in his own eyes, in his history, a concrete being, he's always in the beginning peasant. And that is something completely different, because the peasant, it is the man with tradition, with roots, with sacredness, because relation to the earth makes a peasant a sacred person. And proletarian is devoid of the sacredness. So all the communist vision of the desacralized bourgeois exploiting desacralized proletarian is wrong. Is totally wrong, and that is satanic vision of communism and the same satanic vision of liberalism. But I think that real exploitation begins when the real desacralization begins. So when you regard the other as the thing, as some material body, when you deny the existence of the soul, that is exploitation. So I think modernity is exploitation in all its kind, and communism isn't exception. So social society is based on exploitation because it is based on the denial of the sacred. And if you have the attitude, purely materialist attitude, toward human being, that is already his objectivation, so alienation. So this alienation is the beginning and the foundation of foundation of real exploitation. I think where design of the people begins to be regarded as the thing and not as design, not existential presence, thinking existential presence, not as a soul. Here, exploitation begins. So, in traditional order, there was no exploitation because the soul was accepted and affirmed the existence of soul in all the strata, all the levels of the population. So all the stratas. But hierarchy is nothing to do with exploitation. The hierarchy is based on the quantity of the sacredness, and the priest totally immersed in the sacredness. He is logically on the top. The warriors, half sacred, half less sacred, and more linked to the body, are in the middle. And the people working with bodies, with things, are logically on the lowest level. But if someone from born in the peasantry or in the low caste shows the real qualities of spirituality, he always, in all kind of traditional society, through monastery or through other ways, could arrive to the top of society. For example, in our history, there was Patriarch Nikon, who was the small peasant in the beginning, from poor family, outside of the Moscow, very far from the capital, the son of the normal poor peasant family. And he became much more important in some time than our Tsar, Patriarch Nikon, because basing on the spiritual quality, you could always find a way to be put on the top of the society in the traditional order, in the capitalist order, in the logically, you as well, your origin don't matter, origins don't matter, or in the socialist, but that is not so. So, and the criterion is different. Money in the case of the capitalism, or loyalty to the Communist Party in the socialism, and nothing to do with sacredness, neither with capitalism nor with communism. So I'm against communism and capitalism, but I am against as well against nationalism. It's important because I'm against all three political theories of modernity, of Western modernity, advocating or Western pre-modernity or not Western traditional societies or post-modernity. So I try to localize modernity with all three political theories and to show that it's just local phenomenon. It is very, very eloquent, very, 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 very big, but local phenomenon that tries to pretend to be universal. It's in that sense, I think that modernity has nothing universal. It is just local deviation, kind of dead end impasse of the history.
In the West, in America, it's become more and more common to believe that there was a lost Russian civilization that stretched into Alaska and California, and that the history has been changed. Klaus Schwab is even talking about Tartaria and the reset and saying there's another reset. Do you believe that there has been a change in the narrative of history?
So first of all, when you are dealing with history, you aren't dealing with something universally given. History is rewritten always, because our understanding of being, of society, of man changes, and our regard, our understanding, interpretation of history changed as well. So history is projection of the present, of the past, not once and for all established past changed as long as we are changing. When we are speaking about the history, we are speaking about huge amount of these projections of the present, and mostly in the West, when on West today, modern West, when you more Western liberal modern people speak about history, you mean your understanding, your interpretation, your projection, your narrative. And your narrative is based mostly on the liberal progressism. liberal in some different stages, radical progressism or moderated progressism. So conservatism in that sense is nothing against this progressism. It's just moderate version of progressism. So, for example, that in the 50s or 60s there was so good, but in the 80s and today that's terrible. So that is just that has nothing to do with rejection of this progressist narrative. The Western liberal narrative is based on the idea that the West is the universal example of the history, and the history of the West is the summary of the history of the humanity. So all the humanity is going in the same way, passing through the same stages and phases of development, and their development is linear. So you follow. We are following the line. And the history of the Western Europe is the progress, social progress, technological progress, economical progress. And America is the highest point somehow of this social and economical and material progress. So everything is coming to America, and America is ideal not only of the past, but ideal for the future. So that is the city over the hill, on the hill, and that is a kind of goal of the end of the history, liberal end of the history. And everything that is not like that, it is just in delay. So when you see something other, for example, Indian society or communist society in China or Russian society, Russian civilization, you think, oh, these guys are in delay, so they are underdeveloped. They are like us, but not. They didn't arrive to the point we have arrived at. So ethnocentric, racist, imperialist understanding of history. So in that vision, so there is the avant-garde of the humanity, the Western history, the fight for the progress, arriving to the internationalism, cosmopolitanism, global market, one world, and great reset is precisely about that. That is the idea to refresh this globalist progressist narrative, not to forget it, because there are so many challenges last year's Islamic challenge, Russia, China. So the problem inside of Western society, fight against normality, fight for to make the perversions and sins norms, and impose this norms with force. So everything, all that can lead to somehow some loss of the energy. And Schwab and Biden as well, they invite us to you better, all everybody, to concentrate on this global liberal agenda and to impose it with much more energy, power, accelerate the progress, help to Greta Thunberg to grow up and to become world leader of new generation and feminism and transgender and artificial intelligence as a kind of logical a goal of the history, universal goal, and to fight everybody who are obstacles to arrive to achieve this goal. So they don't let the history to go its way. Russia, this evil Russians, this evil and delayed in development, Chinese and Muslims. So they should be all brought on the board of this great reset. The best of them, more developed, more progressive, or destroy, exterminate, finally. That is somehow great reset, how we interpret great reset. And the history is in the center of it. So the history, all the history here attracted to found to this argument. So why it is so? Because of history. Because the history is progress. Because the West is progress. So West is history, and West is progress. Follow, and we are on the highest point of the progress. We are arriving to this famous city on the hill. We are very near to the top of the hill, and everybody who tried to pull us back, they should be punished for that. All those Russians who pull us back, we need to come. We were close to this top of the hill or the mountain. So that is how the history is seen by you, and we have totally different history. We see this history as history of the very special and particular Russian civilization, Christian Orthodox, against imposition of the Western values. So before it was in the Tsarist form, Russian Empire defended herself against the British Empire, Catholic Kingdom. After Soviet Union, communist, the same empire, but this time communist against capitalism. Now Russia, democratic in our understanding of democracy, authoritarian democracy of modern Russia, is fighting against totalitarian liberalism of the West. But always the same people, the same country, the same history. Our history has nothing to do to your history. So we are living in different histories. And when we come to China, we could discover third history. And their narrative is very different from ours and from yours. They think that universality is the Chinese circle of being, and everything universal, as they call it, one under the heaven. That is the concept of Tianxia doctrine in Chinese, Tianxia, all under the heaven. Everything is included in Chinese empire, and the time is going by in the circle. So that is circulation of time in the China. That is their history, totally different from yours and from ours. So you have top of the hill history, end of the history of Hegel, of Marx, of Fukuyama. We have our fight of the sons of the light against the sons of the darkness, and preserve our own identity. It is our history that helps us to fight today against the West. China has its own history. So there are at least three histories, not only one. And if we look closer, we will discover that Muslims have their history, Indian, their history of Africa and Latin America. So there is no only one history, in spite of Schwab, Biden, Soros, or Bill Gates' claims. So Facebook and Twitter and Google and YouTube pretend there is only one history, and they are the most sophisticated, developed, and high-end representations of this top of the history.
But so much of this information we have, I guess, in Western liberalism especially, there's the counterculture. There are people that believe space is a lie by NASA and that the world is flat. And there's so many people that believe truth, mistruth, disinformation, misinformation, true information. It's hard to know what is true. Tartaria was a world-spanning civilization before the last reset. But it's interesting that the Tartaria thing is so rejected, it's been suppressed in the West, and yet it's considered sort of the antithetical to Atlanticism ideology. I mean, this idea that there was a Russian, a Eurasian Tartar civilization that's in Alaska that went to Tartaria and was in, you know, ancient Roman areas, is it ontologically useful? Is it propaganda? Does this hold any water? Does this make sense that there was a Pax Tartary at some point before a former reset? Because it seems like it's telling a lot of Westerners to reject Western liberalism and to look for this old reset, what originally happened to the Tartarian civilization. Is there any truth to that?
It is difficult to say, because what we are calling Tartaria, it is the same as Eurasia, or better, Turan, Turanian civilization. But Turanian civilization was precisely the name for Indo-European societies of nomads, In the middle of the Eurasian steppes, there existed a kind of matrix of all Indo-European peoples coming from there and spreading through the earth. So that is Turanian cradle of the Indo-European peoples. After this age of Indo-European nomads, they had hairs. No more Indo-Europeans as Mongols and Tartars and Turks. And they, that time, they were called Tartaria, something like that. But that is much, much, much later, because initially there was precisely Indo-European Turan, and the word Turan is Indo-European. That means the people, simply people, Turan, and that was Iranian name for nomads in the European, Iranian-speaking nomads of the Eurasia to the north from Iran. And that was, there are so many civilizations, so many levels of the civilizations in this area and this space. So we could not say something universal about it. So Russia, before the Golden Horde, never was the real ruler of this. We were on the margin. We were the small part of it. We were mostly peasants colonized by German elite, and before by Scythian Sarmat elite. But we were not masters of Eurasia, of Turan, of Tartaria. And there were other people, the European people, after the Turkish people, Mongol people, who ruled this great space. But Russia, is after the fall of the Golden Horde, Russia became heir of this. And that was great change. The great change between other Slavs and us, Eastern Russians, we are heirs of this Tartaria, and other Slavs are part of Eastern European settlers. It's different peasantry, mostly. So it is two different kinds. So we are not only Slavs, but we are also the rulers of this great Tartarian, Turanian space. That is Eurasian, precisely. And about the links between Alaska and this territory, they existed on the ethnical level much earlier. Not in the time of unification of this, they have nothing to do, they had nothing to do with the Europeans or Turks. That was very, very ancient Paleo-Asiatic people living there on both sides, partly in Eurasia, partly in Northern America, and they belonged to very ancient civilization that I'm calling in my book now, Mahia, the civilization of Raven. Because there is always the figure of Raven in the center of their culture. So that was very ancient, matriarchal, a very special civilization of Raven that had nothing to do with other Indians, American Indians, nothing to do with this Turanian, Tartarian space. It's very particular, very special, very interesting, with a trickster figure in the center, with very unusual kind of rationality, very psychedelic, chaotic in some sense rationality, and Chukcha, Eskimos, Inuits, and some tribes of North America belong still to this civilization. That was common to the Eurasia, to the northern eastern part of Eurasia, and to northern North America before the coming of the Anglo-Saxons. So that is about Eurasia.
Do you think that the West is creating a false history? You said that the West is soulless or geistless, spiritless in so many ways. Do you think that the West is creating this, you call it also satanic culture. Is it creating the satanic culture in order to displace on purpose Aboriginal cultures?
So here I follow traditionalist logic. So according to Genon and to Evola and to other, Burkhardt and other, the modernity is anti-tradition. So in the tradition, we can find different religions, different versions, different peoples, different cultures, and all of them are based on the sacraments. In Islam, the sacraments is regarded in one way, in Judaism the other, in Christianity, in Hinduism, in China, Chinese civilization, in Buddhism. Everything in traditional world is different. And there are many branches of tradition, but the main common denominator is acceptance of the sacredness and of the soul, of the transcendentality, of the being of the soul, spiritual being, mysticism, and eternity. Very important, eternity, because relation to the sacred is as the relation of the time to the eternity. So something that is temporary is fire, will be destroyed sooner or later, but what is eternal will stay. And this eternity is not a summary of the time or something that will come after. Eternity is always here, and discovery of this everlasting eternity inside of us is the sacredness, is the relation of sacredness. Modern West, modern Europe, starting from 15th century with modern science, modern philosophy, modern society, democracy, bourgeois society, national state, progress and liberalism, evolution theory, materialism, was total destruction and reversion and subversion of this relation to sacraments. That is the only one unique civilization that is not the branch of the one of the version of the sacred civilization, but civilization based on the negation of the sacredness. And that is common denominator of modernity. It is satanic in the Christian eyes, it is Dajjal in Muslim eyes, it is Kali Yuga in Indian eyes, it is disaster, cosmic and spiritual disaster in Chinese eyes that should be repaired according to Chinese culture. So that is anomaly. So the modern West is a kind of disease, of spiritual, cultural, civilizational disease. And there are people who suffer that. So normal Western people has nothing to do with the decision to be satanic puppet, but they are turned into satanic puppet, into the ways of Satan in spite of them. And that is a long process, starting with modernity and coming to the last stage today, because today we have in the presence of the modern or postmodern West, we are dealing with clearly, openly satanic civilization. And here, it is not just absence of the sacredness, that is anti-sacredness that is entering. So Satan is not only negation of the God, it also presenting himself as a God. So I think there is some kind of black sacredness, or black miracles in the modern technology, in the look of the Soros or Biden. They are not normal. They are not just atheists or modern people. There is something more in them or less in them. They are minus people. They are results of some mathematical destruction of the human nature from these figures. And there is something really, really terrible and really, really horrible. And they look, how they lie, how they mock, how they what they do, how they destroy with a smile the rest of the humanity on the planet. They are exterminator. And how before they tried to seduce the Western masses. Now they just control them with the hard hand. So they don't seduce anymore. They just use the cancel culture, the wokeism, the obligatory transgender or a transhuman a set of norms and rules. The so-called rules-based order is based on this satanic rules-based order. And it is more and more evident today that we are dealing with society, anti-tradition, anti-civilization, not with one civilization among the other, not with, because the conflict is always possible between Christianity and Islam, Islam and Judaism, Buddhism and Hinduism, Chinese tradition, and in the, always it is quite possible inside of Islam, of Shia against Sunni, but the, all that is inside of sacredness. Modern civilization, Western civilization, is the only one that is outside of sacredness. That is the point, outside. And that is unique. And if the masses are victims, but elite, doers, totally responsible sect of maniac, of satanists, who know what they are doing. So I think there is, at least among the most important among them, there is clear understanding of their mission, and the mission of nihilism, the philosophers like Deleuze, for example, or a postmodernist, they recognized themselves as the bearers of this mission of radical extermination of the thought, of the normality, and speculative realists, for example, objective ontology. That is the trend in modern philosophy that openly recognized that the last step into the object, it is appearance of the other gods from outside. So it is something declared philosophically. So I think that now we are arriving at the point when the satanic nature of the Western liberal civilization is no more hidden, is manifest.
I have to agree, it's very observable. So another question about the expansion of this cultural hegemony of Atlanticism. Donetsk and the Ukraine conflict, I think it's essential to ask you, how do you view the conflict and what is really going on? Why have we only in the West started hearing about this now with the president of Ukraine who was, there was a television show about him before, about him becoming president, and then now he's been elected, like very CIA Mockingbird stuff. What can we say about the Ukrainian conflict and Russia's involvement?
So it is very dramatic for us. It is very bloody and very, very tragic. So it is not easy to speak about that. So I think I couldn't enter in the propaganda here, because when I try to speak about that, I am immediately involved in the propaganda camp, because the West says all Russians are pure evil. They have attacked without no reason at all, without any reason at all, the poor, good, liberal Ukrainians, and Russian propaganda affirmed the quite opposite. We have entered to punish and prevent attack, to destroy biolabs, to prevent expansion of nuclear threats, and to revenge the Nazi criminals, torturing, raping, killing childs, and both sides, pure propaganda. So I could not enter in that, because if you, that is a kind of war. You could not be neutral in the war. So you should fire on in one direction, or you'll be killed. So if you refuse to take a rifle. So, but outside of propaganda, just to analyze the picture, I think that that is the conflict between Russia and the West. First, Eurasia against Atlanticism. So it is tellurocracy against thalacracy. Thalacracy. Earth, sea power against earth, land power. Sea power against land power. And that is as well revolt against or kind of revanchism of the victory of the sea power over land power in the 90s. We were weak then, and we are much stronger now, in order to reaffirm our presence on the bigger scale, trying to reconquer some territories we have lost as geopolitical pole of land power in the 90s. That is kind of geopolitical revanchism of some way. So that's authoritarian. Authoritarian is not the solution, for example. Authoritarian Russia is authoritarian in its own Russian way. What is about authoritarian Western society? At the same time, it is the fight against the pressure of global civilization and economy and the values and the culture. That is the fight to save and defend and preserve Russian identity against Western one. So that is fight for history, for our understanding of what history is and should be. So that is civilizational fight. And as well, that is more or less common for our history, Russian history, reconquering of the Western Russian territories. Because we, from time to time, we're losing them. They become the part of the Western structure that repeats from centuries. So from the beginning of the Kievan Russia, there was some conflict between Western Russia and Eastern Russia, and that fight, and our princes fought for Kiev many times, Western princes against Eastern princes. So that repeats through all our history from time to time. When we, the Western Russia, Western part of Russia, when we become stronger, we reconquer it. So the poor people, what we are losing, we are shedding blood from century to century, and that is the part of our pattern. Historical pattern. I'm very, very unhappy with that, but that happens. So from time to time. And that is my vision of the reasons of what is going on, because now Russia, but the difference is here with classical geopolitics, that now we are fighting not for bipolar world, because we could not anymore afford to be the second pole. So it is the fight against unipolar world, for multipolar world, multipolar. So it is, in that sense, we don't defend some universal, as in time of communism, some universal pattern or type of civilization that could fit to any society. We are not anymore universalists in our attitude. We are much more local in that situation. So we are fighting against unipolarity to defend ourselves, but to let the other poles to appear. That is why this alliance with China, that support of Russian actions in the Muslim world, and why India at least hesitates to between the West and us. So that is on all the level, in any sense, it is historical situation. And when we win, the world will be completely irreversible multipolar. I don't like to consider the possibility what if we lose. So it should be punished now by law in Russia. So let the West think about what. Here I stop, because when we win, the world will be certainly multipolar. That will not mean the end of the West. So the West, liberal West, loses not so much. For example, if Russian possible event, loss, that will be the end for Russia. For Russia, it's an independent pole. For us, it is existential. For us, it is ontological battle. But the West could proceed without us. It will be hard. It will be awkward. It could cause many difficulties. But I don't think that the blow will be mortal. Finally, you could have, and with Trump, for example, if we imagine Trump being president, that nothing at all happens, nothing at all, because that doesn't affect too much American strategy, American security. It is not direct attack. It is just some revision of post-Cold War borders very far from America and with no existential threat from NATO partners. What is going on? So in Trump nationalist vision, I think nothing at all happens. For Biden, it's described as catastrophe, because for globalists, it is catastrophe. For the West, it is not at all catastrophe. It is a chance, but it is the fight. So it is not a fight against the West, it's the fight against the modernity and postmodern globalist liberalism.
So you've spoken about how we need to respect the equity of differences between people and tolerate people who want to live within their own culture. But what about people who don't want to live within their own culture? They want to escape their own culture. Or what about people who are decidedly Western or satanic, as you say? If Ukraine wanted to be satanic and part of the global hegemony, do they have a right to do that? Does anyone have a right to be part of something that's decidedly evil? And also, what if this wasn't with the West? What if this was part of a Eurasian conflict? Like, let's say this was in Manchuria or China at the border of Korea or something. Would that change things more?
So I think that for sure, there is the free choice between to be satanist or not. But when you observe how the path of the very close to us, very, very close society, Ukrainian, part of it, chooses satanic identity and try with the brutal tools impose that on the second half, with not only with weapon, but with propaganda, with political pressure, with information, and all that concerns you, yourself. You could not be indifferent, so choose what you want. And after that, they say satanic part of Ukrainian society, Western, the same, the Western liberal or Nazi, the same. They say, when we, with the help of the great global liberalism, will be stronger, we will for sure attack you with nuclear weapon in order to take back Donbas and Crimea. And now, for now, we are selling that part of the human body, or living body, and children to the West, and we are founding bio labs in order to spread the COVID on something like that. And we are planning to attack you in some week or some days. When you receive such visions, such picture, you could not say, please, we tolerate any of your decision. Please kill us. Please kill yourself. Please be the member of NATO. So there is legitimate defense, in my opinion, of the civilization. The problem is, can we do that? Can we win or not? No, it is not about have we right or not. America makes so many unjust intervention everywhere, killing the presidents. So somehow we do the same now. Somehow, I agree. But it is not good. It would be much better to follow more effective, milder way to achieve the goal. So, but being involved in that, when it is being agreeing in general features with this necessity of this opposition to the West modernity, so I could not criticize. I have no right to criticize the decision of my president, of our president, not being totally satisfied or happy with how it is going on, but I understand. Yeah, I try to understand more than to promote or convince the other. I think this. But if you, for example, if you consider that Mexico becomes a radical anti-American country, and president of Mexico and all the political structures singing from the morning to the evening, let us kill Yankee, let us kill this bloody, evil, perverted North America, let us fight them, let us destroy their children. And the half of pro-American, pro-United States population is suffering under the killers, criminals. The women are raped, the children killed, and they try to for example, to get Texas back, or California back, or plan at least, and trying to get nuclear weapon from Russia. So how do you behave? I think that it is problematic, and tolerance have some limits. But I don't like to enter in this argument, and prefer, if you have some other question, to speak about theoretical issues.
Absolutely. I think those were perfect answers. You've talked about the world island theory, and I'd like to understand where Russia will be, or where the Eurasian state will be in a generation if the plan goes well.
So the history is open. History is open, and history, as we have said already, we have at least three histories. So as many histories as there are poles, or so many histories as there are civilizations capable to defend their identity materially and spiritually. That is perfect definition. So when we have a civilization capable to defend its identity materially and spiritually, we have the pole and we have the history. So if we have small society with no capacity to impose their narrative, so their history cannot compete with other. And that is pity, but such thing happened. But when we are the full-scale civilization with full-scale capacity to defend our identity, so we have the history. And these histories compete. So if we ask American, Russian, and Chinese about 100 years, we will receive three wishful thinking, three form of wishful thinking, because that is continuation of our own narrative. So, but interesting. So the picture we are dealing with objectively should be based on the comparison between this. So I could not say about Russian future without taking in consideration Western future or Chinese. So it is too intermingled. So, and they are in competition. And in this competition, they create these bifurcational points. So if we win, that's one thing, if you win the other. But what is interesting, if we consider first Western narrative, it is very, very funny that there is no positive futuristic scenario in art, in cinema. All the films on the West, on the future, are totally disaster. So be prepared to disasters. Be prepared to the catastrophe. Be prepared to the end of time. Be prepared for the invasion of aliens or Russians or some other. So Mad Max, the total destruction of world by comets or by planet or by moon. So, and no city on the hill. City on the hill belong to the past. So you have no future, in one word. So you are in punk position. So no future, punk not dead, and you are dead. So I think that this is very ominous, that we compete not with the shining vision of how happy will be Western civilization, Russian civilization, Chinese civilization. We compete with how bad we will be, who will be survive, who will survive. So that is a very ominous and very dangerous manner to treat the future. So we have this catastrophe of atomic nuclear war, ecological catastrophe, epidemic, zombie apocalypse, robots, and artificial intelligence taking control over humanity, every kind except the normal human flourishing, prospering life. That is very dangerous, and that what West says about the future. And when you look into the eyes of the Biden or Soros or Bernard-Henri Lévy or the other, or Elon Musk or Zuckerberg, you see the decisiveness to lead the humanity to this stage. So they are already done some decisions. So they insist on the suicidal turn. And that is very dangerous, I think. Russia, so Russian future is much more traditional, I would say. So we see, as always, that we will fight against such end of history, against the West, as a catastrophe. Because if modern West dreams about the catastrophe, so we regard this dreaming West as a catastrophe. So the catastrophe, not what will happen with the West and the humanity, the catastrophe is already here with the existence of modern Western modernity. So we already are in the end of time. So, and fight against the West is the only way to get out from this situation. So we regard the future as the fight against the modern world, as against revolt against modern world, and openness to the gods to return. So that is our sacredness to return. So our fight is the last fight of those who are still on the side of the sacredness. After all that proves that humanity has passed through, now we still are loyal to the God, to the soul, to the eternity, and that will fight. I could not imagine the victory. I could imagine fight against Western scenarios. So the fight against the West is the life, is the meaning of the life. Because in our tradition, Antichrist is the central figure of the history. And when Antichrist comes, you have no other duty but to fight him. So not to pray too much, not to fasting, but first of all, not fight Antichrist. That is the main religious duty, to fight it, not to defeat, to fight. Defeat or not depends on God, but fight depends on you. And that Russian very humble vision of the history. So rejection of Antichrist is the gesture, is the step that is punished by Antichrist. But we should proceed in that way. So I think that means to eradicate the modernity, to overcome the techniques, to get rid of the global networks. And now the West helps us. He thinks he will kill us, cutting our relations to economy, to putting the sanctions on us, cutting off from all the networks and closing Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, deplatforming, and so on. But they unconsciously, the West saves us. So less West, more Russia, less modernity, more victory. That is so. And that is the fight. So we need to liberate ourselves from the modernity, get out of it, get rid of it, and to affirm our own civilizational identity.
Professor Dugin, this has been an honor, and I very much appreciate the time you took to answer these questions. I hope it helps a number of people, specifically in the West, to understand better the ideology of Eurasianism and of Russia's intentions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please send me the link.
Absolutely. Is there any links that you want to promote or books that you want people to look for in Nus Machina? Or?
No, not nothing special.
How un-Western of you.
Hey, everybody, tune in to Reason Tartarian.
Reason Tartarian. Reason Tartarian.